Okay, let me just do a couple things before we jump into the talk. I want to point you to some magazines I have over there that I brought. This one is kind of our most recent one, and it's talking about parents and family dealing with issues of sexuality. I brought another issue that's more specifically geared towards youth, and then I have one that's a little bit more all over the map. It talks about a positive view of sexuality, and then it also has issues of marriage. It's got a great article by a woman who talks about her mixed orientation marriage and issues like when should pornography kind of prevent us from moving forward in relationship, that kind of thing. So check those out. I'm going to pass this around. If you would like to receive future copies of our magazine, you can sign up here. And other communication from us, so we'll pass that around. All right, so we're going to be looking at raising sexually faithful kids. I suspect some of what I'm going to talk about is probably you guys are ahead of the curve. I see all these young children. I see pregnant women. I see people not yet married. So this is actually not irrelevant to where you're at. It would actually be really helpful for you guys to be thinking about these things. The sooner we start thinking about it and taking steps, the better. So, are you trying to communicate with me? No? Okay. All right. So, one of the things that, addressing some of the people here, hey, you might be thinking, I've got really young kids. I don't need to worry about this. You really need to start talking sooner than you think. So you don't have a few years before you need to deal with this. Kids are being exposed to porn at younger and younger ages. And in fact, I have a friend of mine who years ago, called me up. His family had all been outside, like doing stuff in the yard. His little son, who I think was 4 at the time, had to go to the bathroom and went into the house to go to the bathroom. And they're like, hey, what's taking him so long? They went in, and here this kid had picked up the remote for the TV, went on pay-per-view, and ordered an adult film. Like, completely unwittingly, right? This kid was not scheming this. It was just like, I'm going to play with these buttons. I have a 4-year-old, so I know kind of how these things can go. And fortunately, they got in there, and he had only been in front of it for a couple minutes. But the point is, these things are all around us, and we need to be thinking wisely, even at young ages, when you might think, oh, I got plenty of time. Some of you might be thinking, hey, we're a Christian family. We don't really have these issues in our home. We work with families all the time that are Christian families, people who homeschool their kids. One of the really sad situation that I dealt with a number of years ago was a family calling, and there had been incestual abuse in their home from an older sibling to a younger sibling, and the parents were just confounded. Like, we homeschool our kids, we don't even have a TV. Like, how could these things be happening? Well, the reality is all of us have kind of the ultimate Trojan horse beating in our chest. You can't isolate and just insulate yourself from the world, because these problems are inside of us. They come out of our own hearts. So we need to take seriously dealing with it. Now, some of you might have older kids, and so some of what I might say, you might think, wow, I've kind of missed the boat. Maybe my kids are in high school or they're out of the home. I do want to say this is a no condemnation zone. Okay, but I do want you to, we're responsible for what we know. And having learned some things tonight, I just want to encourage you, and we'll talk about this more in a few minutes, with the importance of now acting on some of these things. It's never too late, and we'll talk about that more in a minute. So I put those mini books up there just so you would see that these are a couple of resources that we have that are just easy to read things. That I've based some of this talk off of those. So if we could advance to the next slide there. So the main thing I want to say is that this is, at the outset, this is a really crucial parenting responsibility. I talk to so many Christians, and when I say to them, how did you hear about sexuality? Most of them, it was from their friends. Or they kind of picked things up on TV or in media. They didn't have parents who really sat them down and talked to them about these really important issues in life. And I would say it's more critical now than at any other point because of the influx of technology and all the temptation that's out there right now. you know, obviously, the internet has made hardcore pornography widely available, and it's pretty anonymous now. It's getting piped right into the device that you keep in your pocket, and it's free in many cases. You know, we have no longer in our culture a real shared sense of sexual morality, right? There used to be, even if you didn't exactly agree with a Judeo-Christian sexual ethic, you still kind of realize this was the cultural norm, and that's obviously not the case anymore. And so our kids really need us to speak into this. If we are not going to disciple our children in this, the world will absolutely fill that void and disciple our kids. So we really need to take it seriously. 1 Thessalonians 4, the passage that Raymond alluded to is really important, and it's communicating that sex is both this really glorious gift and at the same time something that's really important with that we steward. That our sexuality is supposed to demonstrate a set-apartness, right? That's what that word sanctified means, that our sexuality should demonstrate a way that we're different than the rest of the world. It's incredibly important. Where we're at culturally means that you're going to have to start having conversations with your kids maybe sooner than you would have in the past. And obviously they're getting messages from billboards and from media and all kinds of things. And there's a huge push even with online predators. It's a significant issue that the kids need to be made aware of. So it's all kinds of great reasons to talk about this. I just want to encourage you at the outset, because this can sound like a real downer at this point, that Jesus promised to build his church and the gates of hell would not prevail. And that as decadent as our culture is in lots of ways, it still pales on some level to first century Greco-Roman world that the kingdom exploded in, right? So we have, as Christians, we have great hope for what God can do, and we should not be fearful as parents about what can happen. Although as a father with three daughters and all the horror stories I've heard, I can tell you it can be scary at times. So let me advance the slide there, if you would. A couple things in terms of where do you start. I just want to challenge you. It is really, really important to start with yourself, to start looking at your own attitudes towards sexuality. Do you believe that this is a good gift from God, that he declares to be very good? In what ways has your own sexuality been impacted by the fall? In what ways do you struggle with lust? Not only in what ways do you struggle with sexual sin, but where have you been sinned against sexually? That all these things really matter. You know, a good question to think about is how important is sex to you? Do you feel God has let you down in this area of your life? What do you think would make for a really great sex life? Were you sexually active prior to marriage? There's a lot of undoing that needs to happen. In my own experience, you know, I had a lot of sexual history prior to marriage, and there was ways that I needed to unlearn all the things that I'd learned through both exposure to pornography from a young age and then obviously my promiscuity. There was a lot that I needed to unlearn, and messages that we receive from things like pornography about the importance of sex or even sexual practice that needs to be unlearned. And we need to take that seriously. Here's the thing. If you have a lot of guilt and shame over sex, that's going to impact how you engage your kids. That's going to impact it. You're not going to be able to really talk about this as the gift of God that it is. Similarly, if you are struggling right now, it might be easy for you to kind of minimize your own child's behavior. You know, have kind of a boys will be boys attitude, for example, about pornography, which, by the way, is not just a male problem. I want to be very quick to say that sexual sin is a gender-neutral pathogen of the soul. It is not just boys that are doing this, obviously. You know, you can either minimize it or you can feel really hypocritical. You're just going to be silent because you're not dealing with your own stuff. You're not taking it seriously and entering in. Obviously, I mentioned being sinned against by others. You know, that's a significant issue. And I just want to say, we're not going to talk a lot about abuse today, obviously, but if this is you, you really need to take seriously getting soul care for that, finding an experienced counselor, having someone walk with you through that. It's really important. These are not, you know, I've heard people use that, really misquote Paul, this one thing I do, forget what's behind. He doesn't mean don't deal with the stuff that happened in your life, right? Because the reality is you can't, if you don't deal with these things, you can't forget them. They stay with you. They impact you. So let me keep moving and just round this out by saying, you know, your own sexuality is going to impact your kids, where you're at with it, and we need to take seriously not passing on household gods, right? Leading our kids in right worship. The other thing I want to say is that we need to talk positively about sex. This is so important. So many Christian kids, and perhaps some of you, you know, raised in a Christian home would affirm this, that all you heard about were negatives. You know, don't do this, that, you know, this is bad, you get warned about STDs, you get warned about unwanted pregnancies, you're told all this negativity about sexuality. And I've worked with some young, you know, Christian couples, young, newly married, and there's such a kind of tentativeness with the marriage bed because there's a sense of shame and even guilt in some cases because there was so much negativity around this gift. So you have to start positive when you talk to your kids about sexuality. That is so, so important. You can pray for me. I am finishing a second book that is really focused on a positive theology of sex. What does the Bible say about sex, and in what ways is it good? So there's a lot I could say here, obviously, but a couple things that I would just point you to. You know, when God designed humanity, the very first command he gives them is go be fruitful and multiply. Right, John Freeman in his book, Hide and Seek, refers to this. You know, God's command is, go have sex and lots of it. Very first thing he says to newly created humanity. Clearly, a God who's positive about sex. There's so much, you know, Ephesians 5, there's the exhortation to a son to rejoice in the wife of your youth, to be delighted with her, to be intoxicated with her love. You know, Song of Solomon, we could spend quite a bit of time talking about. And some of the passages, if I was going to really bring out the full import of the Hebrew, we'd feel a little uncomfortable. It's not pornographic, but it is straight up like, when you read that, is this what she's talking about? Is that what he's... Yes, that's what they're talking about. You know, it's this book that is a celebration of human sexuality. And so the reason why I'm harping on this for a moment is because I think the church has been too negative on sex. I mean, look at the whole... You know, for a lot of the history of interpretation, the Song of Solomon was basically like, oh, that's about Jesus in the church. That's all it is. You know, don't get too excited about this poetry. Now, I think because of what Jesus taught in Luke 24, everything in the law, the prophets, and the Psalms is about me. On one level, that's true. But it's, you know, there's multiple levels here. And on the surface of the text, it is a man and a woman delighting in each other in profoundly sensual ways. So the Bible is very, very positive about sex. And the ultimate thing that I would want to point you to, why is that? Ephesians 5, you know, Paul's talking about the roles of husbands and wives in marriage. And then he says, this is a profound mystery. I'm talking about Christ and his church. That the whole reality of our sexuality, this is, if you don't remember anything else from tonight, hold on to this. The reason why God created you with a romantic drive and with sexual desires is so that you would understand his heart for you. So that you would understand the joy and delight and longing he has for you. Where is all of human history hurtling forward to? Revelation 19, sitting down at a wedding feast, face to face with the bridegroom at the marriage arranged by our Father from the foundation of the world. That's where all this is headed. That's why Jesus said there's no marriage in heaven when he was challenged in Matthew 22 and elsewhere, challenged about the resurrection. He says, you guys don't get it. There's no marriage in heaven. Why? Because he's the ultimate bridegroom. Because this tiny picture of marriage, husband and wife united, becoming one flesh, their sexual expression, the delight of sexuality, being a part of that is looking forward to an infinitely greater delight and wonder that you will need a resurrection body to even experience. So sex is ultimately about God. There's a lot of positive things to say, is what the point I'm trying to make here. The Lord really brought this home to me very powerfully. I lost my first wife. It'll be 10 years this year when she passed fairly suddenly from diagnosis of cancer to passing in 5 weeks. And, you know, so our daughters were young. They were 8 and a half at that point. And so I plunged into this, like, darkest season of my life. And my own grief, you know, single parenting, which stinks. I don't know if I can get an amen if there's any single parents in the room. That is the worst gig ever. Single parenting. You have all the challenges of being single without any of the blessings of being single. Don't even get me started. So I went through this really dark period, and honestly, there was a part of me that was like, I'm never getting married again. Like, who would sign up for this deal again? And then God brought this amazing woman into my life, and I was willing to risk it again. And one of the passages that just blew me away in this season was Isaiah 62:5. As a young man marries a young woman, so shall your sons marry you. Listen to this. As the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall your God rejoice over you. And so here I am, my heart reawakened to this woman. We had this whirlwind romance, you know, met and married in 8 months. 7 years later, I'm still saying hallelujah, incredible gift from God. So it was not like this crazy thing. I do tell our daughters all the time, though, don't do that. That's typically not a good idea. But as I was in this incredible whirlwind romance and delighted in this woman and my heart reawakening, the Lord just put this passage in front of me and the realization of, are you telling me the joy and delight that I have, that anticipation looking forward to July 7th, is a picture of your heart for me? But it's like a drop in the Pacific Ocean, right? Because here's this infinite God we're talking about. He's just giving me this little human experience to say, this is my heart. So there's a lot positive to say. Let me just stop there. But this is what we need to do. So I put a bunch of passages there, just some of the ones I mentioned in your handout. Now, how else should you start? As much as possible, you want to do it together. You don't want to make this. So some of you guys, I don't know how many of you had this experience. I didn't have it personally, but, you know, there was the whole purity movement in kind of the 80s and 90s. And the big deal was, like, when you're 12 years old, Your same sex parent takes you away for a weekend and you watch videos together or something, I guess. And you have this really awkward thing where you, did anybody have this? Anybody? No? Okay, you were all spared. That's one. Okay, all right. Well, you can tell me if I'm being too critical then. But you know, where it's this, like, you've waited, and there's a couple problems with that. Number one, most people know about sex before they're 12 years old. They've heard something. There was some buzz in the cafeteria at school or kids in the neighborhood or maybe you saw something on TV. So you had some idea. In other words, they kind of missed the boat. If you wait that long, you've missed the boat. The other thing is it's not being made just part of a normal family life. These are things that we talk about. You know, it's one aspect of life. It's a wonderful aspect of life. That's important that we just discuss as a family. So as much as possible, you really do want to make it a part of regular family life, and I'll talk about that more in a moment. Again, if you are a single parent, this is going to mean that there are some particular challenges that you're going to have. And I would just encourage you to be praying who either in the body here or elsewhere in your life can enter in and be a part of walking with you in that. Who would be, you know, an opposite sex person for your opposite sex child, particularly and as they get older. We can talk about that more in a moment. But it really just, all of us really need to live in the body. That's how God calls us to live. He doesn't call any of us to be living isolated, and I would say that's particularly true if you're a single parent. So as much as possible, you want to do that together. Okay, so how do you start? How do you have these conversations, rather? You have these conversations, again, you want to start really small with your kids. Don't wait for that, you know, the one-time preteen gut-wrenching conversation that's miserable for everyone. You want to start when they're really small. And so I would say be ready for the age-appropriate questions. When your kids are really small and they start saying things like, where do babies come from? The way my late wife and I did that and have done again now with our younger kids, my current wife, was we would just describe God made a special hug. And sometimes when mommies and daddies do this hug, it makes a baby. Not every time, but sometimes. now, so th- they were cool with that. Now I do need to warn you that I shared that with a friend of mine, and so that's what she said to her kids, and her kids said, "Do we get to watch?" So it might not always go exactly how you want the conversation to go, but you know, that's an opportunity to just say, "Hey, no, this is something private." Like, as you are, when kids are starting to ask those questions, hopefully you're also starting to have appropriate boundaries for them. You know, who's allowed to take off their diaper, for example? Who's allowed to give them baths? You know, helping them know you don't run around the house naked. You know, you need to put clothes on. So it becomes part of that, teaching them about their bodies, teaching them about appropriate boundaries in relationship. So start talking when they're really young. And one of the reasons... you know, why that's important is because kids do need to be warned and taught boundaries. I'll talk about that more in a moment. You know, as they get older, so that was probably like 3-4 years old with our twins. I have a 5-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son. And that, you know, I don't know, that was probably a year and a half ago or something where we had a similar type of conversation with them. Now, as our older girls, when they got older, I would say it was probably like early elementary, we started talking more about mechanics. You know, well, how does this work? Okay, what do you mean by the special hug thing? And so then it's, okay, here's, you know, so mommy has the egg and daddy has the sperm, and this is how all this works. And I remember sitting at, it came up at dinner, and I was just drawing on a napkin. This is how it works. You know, this is what daddy's bringing. This is what mommy has. And that was enough. Now, obviously, as they got to junior high, we started having more conversations. And then you're starting to talk about puberty and stuff like that. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But the idea is you want to start small and then in age-appropriate ways just respond to the questions that they're bringing. And you don't have to. It's kind of like when guys go for ordination, I always tell them just give the shortest answer possible, you know. If they need to, if whoever's examining you needs to know more, they'll ask another question. Just keep your answers short. Same thing with your kids. If you haven't given them enough, they'll ask another question. They'll try to get more information. So you wanna start small, and what you wanna do is anticipate having this conversation often. It doesn't have to be, you know, every Monday night at the dinner table, but just realize as things come up, just plan on regular conversations. So I want you to think through kind of three categories of ages. That with young children, say ages 2 to 6, you're really just trying to provide them with basic vocabulary, talking to them about body parts. It's really helpful. Like I have right now, I have a boy and a girl, so they see that body parts are different. So you're giving them basic vocabulary. You're helping them understand simple mechanics, and importantly, talking about boundaries. You know, when they start getting a little bit older, so kind of elementary into middle school years, being more definitive about how sex works, how bodies work, and how why God made it that way. And then you want to start bringing in more of those issues of kind of a Christian worldview of sexuality, why God created marriage is the context. You know, I didn't mention this when I was saying talk positively, but the reason why the promises are so important, you know, why is it that a covenant is supposed to be what is the foundation for a marriage? Because it points to Christ in a church, and we have a God who makes promises, and our hope is the promises that he's made, and it's a picture of this. So starting to help them make these connections, particularly as, you know, your kids are hitting middle school and kids are getting sexually active, you know, if they're in a public school especially, or even kids in the neighborhood, where they're starting to see people that are beginning to live differently. And that could also be obviously an extended family context or whatever. And not being ashamed to talk about issues surrounding puberty. And I would say there, you know, as we get to the teens, you want to start doing more stuff with the same-sex child if you're able. But even, you know, for folks that were single parents or whatever, there's a lot that you can still engage your kids on along these lines. And so I definitely talked to my daughters when I was a single father about their bodies changing, went bra shopping, had to take them bra shopping. That was weird. And it was one of those places I'm just like, Lord, I can't believe where you have me right now, in Target buying bras. But, you know, then there were other places, I mean, back to the whole idea of the body, where there were women I had to call saying, hey, I've taken a bra shopping, I really can't help them with tampons. You know, I need some assistance here. So was able to have other people in my life that helped, a couple of their friends' moms who are really wonderful and came alongside them, were able to teach them things. So there's things that you can do, there's things that you can't. In case you find yourself in this position, electric razors and armpit hair, bad idea. Don't do that. Who knew? I mean, I never had to do that before. So anyway, that's kind of as you're getting to puberty, to be thinking through those issues, talking to them about their bodies. Again, all of this, wanting to just be really positive. You know, positive about the gift, positive about the changes. And to backtrack to what I said, that's why it is so important that we start with ourselves. All of us on some level need a redemption of our sexuality. And that's the way that we don't pass on the curse and the brokenness that we've experienced. You know, our kids are going to have their own need of redemption in this area, but we want to do everything we can to have entered into that redemption in Christ so that we are not passing on shame and guilt and all that stuff. As they get to teens, the teen years, 13 to 18, you know, having more direct kind of Christian worldview conversations with them, starting to address directly a lot of the lies of the world that they're hearing. One example I would give is, you know, helping them have a biblical understanding of humanity. You know, my daughters are in public school, they're seniors now, and they have gay friends. They're hearing really compelling stories. Now, I suspect some of you are wrestling with, like, I don't know if the Bible's right on this. I'd love to dialogue with that some afterwards, either in the Q&A or even just one-on-one afterwards, if that's where you are. But part of what is so critical here, lots of Christians are changing their view on this, not because they've started reading the Bible differently, but because they've heard lots of really compelling stories from people that they know and love. There's a way that we need to enter into that, and we should be compassionate. And Christian parents should absolutely be opposed to things like bullying in schools. You know, I used to have parents years ago sending me things, can you believe this anti-bullying campaign in my kid's school? And they, you know, they want us to be protecting, you know, orientation, sexual orientation. I think Jesus would want your kids to not bully and to stand in the gap for kids that are being bullied. Like, what are we fighting here? So we need to think wisely about these things. But at the same time, you know, helping. So, for example, with our daughters, talking through with them, here's what the Bible says about humanity. You know, pro-gay theology is basically built on what I feel is inherently good. My natural inclinations are inherently good. That's exactly the opposite of what the Bible teaches about humanity. The Bible teaches that our natural inclinations are so far off base that the only thing that could redeem them was God becoming incarnate and suffering and dying and paying the price for sin. Because that's the woeful state that we're in on our own naturally, right? And so part of that is, you know, we all needed a supernatural intervention with our sexuality. I needed a supernatural intervention to live as God calls me to live sexually. So helping them to start making those connections. And I should say, too, with teens, you know, for a long time, I had a really bad tact as a parent. It was, you know, girls, I'm not that old. I know I seem old, but it wasn't that long ago that I was in high school. Like, I get it, you know? And I was really, I thought I was doing the right thing. And then their school, not last year, I think it was 2 years ago, Rent was the school musical. And so we got the movie out of the library. We're going to watch the movie and, you know, learn the songs and stuff. My wife left. She did not finish watching the film. I stayed through to the bitter end. And I turned off the DVD player and just said, you know what, I'm really sorry. I don't get your experience. You need to help me understand what it's like to go to school right now where they would put that show for the spring musical. You know, where one of their friends from the track team was the girl who's the stripper who did her solo doing some kind of, I didn't go to the show, doing some kind of striptease. It's a radical different experience. Now, some of you are younger than me, so you're like, yeah, well, guess what, Dave? You know, I'm living it, baby. So I get that. But anyway, when you get older, it'll be different. When you have teens, you'll be older and remember, you don't have the same experience. Okay, let me move on here. As you have these conversations, part of what is really important is starting to face the curse. So what does that mean? I was exposed to pornography. I remember when the VCR was invented, okay? So does anybody else remember? No. So when I was 4 years old, I'm dating myself there intentionally, because when I was 4 years old, I had a neighbor kid say, "Dave, you won't believe what I found in the basement." Right? His dad's Playboy collection. It's a whole lot worse now, right? With the increase of technology. There's ways that we need to be really, really intentional about protecting our kids. And that's going to be different at different ages. I'm not going to get into a ton of safeguarding technology today. But you need to take seriously the dangers that are there and guarding technology. And so what that has meant for us as a family is having things like Disney's Circle, which protects the internet in our home at the router level. They have a kind of on-the-go option subscription so that data devices that are out of the house that you can continue to monitor. So there's you can have different levels of protection, right? So our home PC, you can't do anything on that, because that's the one that, you know, my 5-year-old daughter now is wanting to type letters to people on that computer. So that really needs to be locked down. You can't go anywhere. My daughters now, they're going to be out of my house this time next year. Give them a whole lot of freedom. I can still see everything that they do because I get reports of what they do, and I can monitor in the moment, which is one of the things that's really cool about Circle. I give them a lot more flexibility, you know. So there needs to be kind of wisdom with how you set that up, but taking seriously guarding against the dangers that are out there, and at the same time being aware of the temptations that kids are going to face. And starting to engage them and not be fearful about those things. We are called to be radically countercultural. And that's going to be hard in a lot of ways, but it's a wonderful opportunity with our kids to enter in and to help them to understand how the Christian faith meets them where they live. I would say with young kids, one of the things that's really important is to start paying attention when you are out with them with what they're looking at. And I'm thinking particularly like preschool age or even elementary age. You know, elementary was interesting when they started learning how to read. And so a lot of grocery stores have that like kid-friendly lane that you can go through, but not always. And so I would pay attention. Are they reading the article titles for Vogue magazine? Because then when we get in the car, after we load up the groceries, I'm going to say, "Hey, I saw you looking at that magazine. Do you have any questions about what you saw?" I want you to pay attention to something. The next time you see that magazine, they're going to have the same kinds of articles. There's a way in which the world is so obsessed with this thing. And, you know, in age-appropriate ways, what does Ephesians 4 teach? If you are so given over to these desires, you'll never be satisfied. They'll rule over you. That's why every time you go in there, that magazine is always going to have an article about this. Because the world is just going crazy. Because when Jesus isn't ruling, and you know, you can connect, when you have young kids, you can connect it to all kinds of things in their life. The way they treat their siblings, their obsession with sugary food. I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can say, look, you do this too. You know, the way you covet this particular toy or whatever. So connect it to their lives, But it's just important to be paying attention to what they're looking at. And, obviously, you know, be careful where you go in the mall with Victoria's Secrets and things like that. But the main thing I would want you to think about is you can't completely isolate your kids. You can't insulate them from all these things. You've got to trust God. You have to take steps of wisdom in it and ask him, what does wisdom look like? And you need to be committed to engaging them. One of the things that when I'm thinking about being countercultural, you know, that is important is how are you going to respond to your kids when they make friends, either with, when they, maybe at a young age, with somebody who has two moms or two dads? How are you going to respond to them when they have gay friends? Part of what I just want you to think about is, you know, you want your kids to be engaging families like this. We want to be salt and light in the culture we're in. I just recently grabbed Rosaria Butterfield has a great book. She's a woman who was a professor of queer theory at Syracuse before she came to faith. It's a whole wonderful story I don't have time to go into. But she wrote a book called The Gospel Comes with a House Key. And it is so profoundly convicting to me about the kind of hospitality she shows and just opens up her home to all her neighbors and people of radically different worldviews and political opinions and everything else, just saying, hey, this is who we're called to be in this world. That's what we want to do for our kids. We want to be communicating that to them. So inviting them. We're going to be countercultural as a family, but we're not going to circle the wagons. We're going to enter in. We're going to be salt and light because God has called us to be ambassadors. You know, and he might put some of you, you know, like me, my late wife, her uncle has been in the gay life for a long, long time. So we had to talk to our older girls about homosexuality way before we wanted to, because we don't get together with these guys very often. I didn't want it to be at, you know, Christmas dinner where they just say, hey, how come you guys live together? This is kind of weird, you know. Don't create an awkward extended family situation if you don't have to. So, you know, we started talking to them about it sooner. We also, at the same time, had a lesbian couple next door that, you know, at any given point, they could look at our dining room window and see them kissing in the kitchen. So we needed to start having conversations with them, you know, at probably 5 years old that were before maybe you would have to. So you need wisdom in that. But I think the main thing is communicating to our kids at really young ages, you know what, our only hope is God's grace towards us. You know, one of the things I used was that repeated refrain in Judges, you know, when there is no king in the land, everyone does what's right in their own eyes. There's this fundamental folly that we have. And look at us. Look at how, you know, at any given point, you're going to be able to have vignettes from your own life to help your kids see, we know Jesus, and we still sin against each other all the time. How much more when there's no king in the land? How much more when people don't know him? And so the main thing you want to be communicating to your kids is how desperately we are all in need of the grace of God and crying out to him for mercy and fighting against that kind of, well, we're not like those people attitude. So what about concerns over your specific concerns about your own child? You know, these are big issues that we can't spend a whole lot of time on, but I wanted to at least address it. There is a lot of concern, and particularly with changes, I would say culturally, some very warranted concern about parents who say, "Hey, my son is not a typical boy," or, you know, "I have my girl is not a girly girl" type of thing. I think fitting, by the way. Or interesting, rather, not fitting, you know, when we talk about girls, we have a fairly innocuous word for that, tomboy. Not too bad. You know, what do we call boys? Sissies. It's really important, the kind of labeling that we do. That's really, we need to take that seriously. But first of all, the main thing I want to say now is this has always been an issue. This has always been an issue. My immediately older sister, she's 18 months older than me, was the biggest kid in fifth grade. She hasn't grown since. But she was the biggest kid in her class in fifth grade. And when we played neighborhood football games, she was a bruiser. She would have been labeled a tomboy. She's married. She's got three kids. You know, most of these things do kind of just work themselves out. And so on one level, with parents, I want to say, hey, calm down. This has always been something that's been an issue. But you need to talk to your kids, and you need to talk to them about how they feel about their gender. I'll just give an example in my own life. You know, my son, who's the youngest, was I think, struggling with being the only boy and being, you know, with his sister, with his mom, and his older sisters all the time, and was expressing some what in our culture could be labeled dysphoric kind of things. Now, this is at 2 years old, 3 years old. I could have been a parent who freaked out, or I could have just said, oh, well, maybe God made a mistake. Maybe you really should be a girl. Or I could just constantly affirm him as a boy. And I don't know if this is too earthy for this group, Raymond. I'll give my apology now. But, you know, okay, son, let's go cross streams because we're boys and this is what we do. I'm going to affirm you as a male. There are ways that I can do that, and entering in and playing with him in different ways that I play with his sisters, and inviting him to be rough with me and that kind of thing. So kind of calling maleness out of him instead of freaking out or just dismissing maybe this is just how he is. And I realize, okay, for me that resolved fairly quickly. For some parents, it doesn't resolve. It's not that easy to deal with. But the important thing, I think, is to be constantly communicating, God knows what he's doing in making you as he made you. And affirming God's creativity and wisdom in what he's done. You know, one of the things that is, I understand on one level, the way, you know, gay marriage has made lots of inroads in the Christian church. And there's lots of people who are basically saying, hey, what God really cares about is love and monogamy. He's really not that uptight about gender. We're just getting too hung up on that. I would stridently disagree with that because there's this fundamental otherness that Ephesians 5 is talking about. It can't be a union with same and same. Why? Because it points forward to a union with one who is categorically other. You know, creator, creature, distinction, other. So otherness is really important with sexualities. But I can understand how some people are saying, hey, that's, you know, we're getting too hung up here. But it's really shocking to me that so many Christians are just going with the whole, you know, all the acronym, you know, LGBTQ, because what are we saying by affirming transgender? We're basically saying, yeah, God messed up here. Now, gender dysphoria is a huge, complicated issue. There are people that I've worked with struggling in profound, profound ways, and I'm not belittling that reality. But it's really important as Christians that we hold on to the categories, because this is not a small issue. If you buy into what the culture is saying about transgender, there is nothing less at stake than the character of God, the one who is all-wise and knows what he's doing with his creation. Now, again, there are all kinds of ways that the current world is broken, and I affirm that, and that can impact our brains. I just finished listening to an audiobook by a guy who was a neurosurgeon. It's astounding. What we can both do technologically, but also ways that our brains can be broken, you know. And he talked about, man, if you cut a millimeter away in certain areas, you can really mess up somebody's head and their life afterwards, you know, speech and all kinds of things. So our brains, we are incredibly, wondrously complex creatures. And I'm not trying to flatten out this issue, but I am just wanting to say it is so crucial with our kids to affirm them. Now, along those lines, it's really important that we celebrate their giftedness. So if you have a kid who's really artistic, you don't try to force that kid to play football. He's probably never going to do that, and that's okay. That's how God created him to be. Similarly, if you have a daughter who's an incredible athlete, then you affirm that, you bless that. You don't try to turn her into Betty Crocker. You know, there's ways that we have these categories of masculine and feminine that are actually co-opted by the culture that are not biblical categories. The biblical categories are not masculine and feminine. The biblical categories are male and female. This is how God made you. And so we need to stick to those categories. Okay. Let me keep moving because I am seeing the time, and some of you are getting really panicked seeing how much more I need to get through. Okay. So Yeah, it is important. I addressed this just briefly earlier, but the importance, you absolutely need to talk to your kids, to young kids, about appropriate and inappropriate touching. My children, before they could talk, were being told who was allowed to take off their diaper and who wasn't. And mom and dad want to know if anybody tried to take off your diaper who was not one of these people. So, again, you might not be as kind of trigger happy as I am, given all the horror stories I've heard, but you do need to really be serious about affirming that. And one of the things that's really important here is affirming their voice. That means when I'm playing with my kids and I'm tickling them and they're having fun and they say, stop, I stop. Now, they might, 10 seconds later, say, tickle me, daddy, and I'll start again. But when they say stop, you listen to that. You affirm their voice. You let them know that they have a voice. Similarly, you know, when they meet Great Aunt Gertrude, they've never met her before. You don't make them sit on her lap. You know, there's if it makes them uncomfortable, you've got to. So we try to find things like, hey, buddy, can you give somebody a high five? You know, and urge them. Okay, you can take a step, and obviously affirming, hey, I'm here with you. This is okay. But just, it's important to give them a voice. It's important to not force them into things where they feel uncomfortable. Why? Because then it becomes normalized. Oh, I feel uncomfortable. You don't want to normalize that for little kids. That's not helpful to them. So take that seriously. Through the teen years, one of the things that I would say is that the teen years are a time. You start off small. These are family-wide conversations. When you approach the teen years, you do want to start interacting with them in as much as you can in gender-specific ways. Father and sons, moms and daughters. You know, I've gotten to a point, my wife adopted our older girls a couple years ago. They're closer with her now than they are with me, which is a little bit like, makes me off balance, but it's also right. It's appropriate, and it's a blessing that's the case. So as much as you can, be gender specific. So you can talk about things like bodily changes. The person who gets it because they have that body can speak into it. Masturbation's never going to be an easy conversation. It's going to be easier with the same sex parent than the opposite sex parent. So being able to enter into those kind of conversations. One of the things that I would say is you've got a great blueprint for this in Proverbs. One of my favorite passages is Proverbs 7, where, you know, there is just such honesty with what's going on there. So, you know, the father is basically painting the picture for the son. Hey, I saw this foolish guy. So he's labeling it up front. He's calling it what it is. This is a foolish guy doing something foolish. But then he gives this description. That would be tugging at every young man's heart. What does she say to him? Things like, okay, so I've made sacrifices today. I have fellowship offerings at home. I'm going to feed you. I have food for you. She's also, by the way, saying, don't worry about that religious stuff, I think. I think she's saying, no, we can hold both of these together. We can be good Jews that go to the temple and do this thing, and then we also do this. What else does she say? She's appealing to all his senses. My bed has been perfumed, right? It's luxurious. I have these linens that are incredibly comfortable on my bed. She appeals to all his senses. And then says, I want to make love to you all night long. There's not too many young men that would not want to hear this. You know, this woman who comes out and sees him, kisses him, saying, I've come looking just for you. You're the man that I desire. I think there's a reason that the father goes into such detail here. I think implicit in that is a sense of, I know this looks good. This is what tugs at a young man's heart. I think it's even fair to say there's ways that this can tug at my own heart. But, my son, wisdom means when I take a step down this road, I know where this road ends up. Right? And this road is, all at once he was an ox led to the slaughter. That's the end of this road. So there's an honesty about the reality of struggles and at the same time being very clear about where this is all headed. So, part of what I want you to think about here as parents is where do you need to be honest about your own life? I have wanted, so I shared a little bit about, you know, promiscuity in my life prior to coming to faith in Christ. I had issues with substance abuse. I've wanted my life to my kids to be a cautionary tale. So they know a lot of the detail of my life and things that I've done, so that they would be able to see, this is who I was apart from Christ. This is what God has done in my life. I would encourage you to do that with your kids, to let them know, to be honest with them, to let them see the redemption that God has brought in you. And I hope that many of you have not necessarily gone down the dark roads that I've gone down, but being honest about your own past. And I would say being honest about the reality of temptations. Lauren Winter, in her book Real Sex, talks about the lies that the church tells about sex. Things like, you know what, if you have sex, you're going to feel terrible about yourself. Not necessarily so. You know, the lies of the church, oh, women don't really want sex anyway. That we be honest about our own desires, about our own struggles, and enter into that. And then another part is obviously really listening well to our kids is incredibly important. Inviting them to speak. You know, I shared about my whole rent experience and learning this myself of, wow, I really haven't been listening. I've been trying to just smooth it all over with, oh, I get it, instead of saying, well, tell me so I can really get it. So it is really important to listen and to keep fostering a relationship. Now, again, some of you people might be saying, hey, my kids are older. I haven't really talked about this. I would just urge you, it's never too late to start having conversations, even if that conversation starts with, you know what? I realize I probably should have talked to you about this before. And maybe there's things to confess there, like, hey, I'm sorry, I was too scared, and I didn't do it. Or I didn't feel equipped to do it, and so I didn't. But there's a place to enter in and say, hey, I'm sorry for not having these conversations. Will you forgive me, and can we talk about this now? And I know this is awkward for you, and it's awkward for me too, but I really believe that this is what God is calling me to do as your father, as your mother. So being willing to start have those conversations. A couple things, because if you have kids, they are going to fail, obviously. Our hope is never that they're going to be perfect. So a couple thoughts. First of all, don't freak out. Don't respond in fear if they fail. Don't start running down this road of, oh my goodness, who knows what they're going to turn into. Certainly don't make it about you. You know, they failed. You failed me in this way. How could you do this to me? You know, don't turn it into something about you. Instead, first of all, so the idea is, you know, remember that you are just a little sheep being cared for by the shepherd. Your hope is that your child is a sheep. And so one thing I'd want to encourage you with, what does a faith response look like? Thank God that he exposed this. You know, one of the things I pray is, Lord, if anything is going on in my kid's life, would you shine a light on it? So that we would know. Would you expose it so that we can enter in, so that we can engage them. So thank him. This is a reason for praise. You know about this because God has exposed it. Because part of that is, my goodness and mercy pursues you all the days of your life. He is pursuing your child in this. And he's inviting you to enter into that and be a part of that. So praise him for exposing it. Faith also looks like saying, Lord, would you please give me the grace to enter in and to parent well in this. You know, John 15, you will not bear fruit if you are not abiding in the vine. One of the ways that we abide, we abide best when we realize there is no way I can do this. You know, the most dangerous thing is when you think you can do it, because then you're most prone to not abide. But one of these parenting issues is realizing, wow, I have no idea what I'm doing. I really, really need help here. So God, would you give me grace to parent well? You know, again, trust his purposes in this. He's exposed it. Why? Because he loves your kids. He's wooing your children in doing this. I love, you know, Hebrews 12 has been an important one for me. God disciplines the sons he loves. You know, no discipline is pleasant at the time. It's painful, but what? It is producing the peaceful fruit of righteousness when it's accomplished its purposes. He's in this. So trust his purposes in that for them. Galatians 6:1 is an important verse with this. You know, instead of freaking out or ignoring it, which maybe we'd be prone to do, just say, oh gosh, I wish I hadn't seen this. It's pointing to restoration. So it says, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Right? There's this invitation to enter in and to restore. Be direct about it. So that means, you know, you want to confront them in love with what's going on. You tell them what you know. You tell them how you found out. It's really important when you are being direct in this conversation that you communicate your love for them and God's love for them. You know, God is not disgusted with you. Raymond started off pointing us to 1 Thessalonians 4. There's a reason why that passage is in the Bible, because God's people struggle with sexual sin. You know, in the church, we act like, oh, who could possibly do that? Well, all of y'all, that's why it's there. You know? So you want to tell your kids that. I mean, that is so crucial for them to know in that moment. You love them. God's love them. You want to fight against the shame that's there. You know, there's a sense in which when we understand the gospel, it deals with the guilt of our sin. You can see Jesus lifted up for you. You can believe in the atonement. And you can say, okay, I'm not guilty. But you can still have a sense of shame. What undoes shame is being affirmed in the body of Christ with the truth of the gospel by being shown love by other people. A quick shout out for the book that I haven't read it, but the book Encouragement. A pastor friend of mine said, the language of love is encouragement. You know, encouraging your child in this place is a huge way to combat the shame. And again, that's where, if you've been honest, like I talked about a few moments ago, you can really invite them to say, hey, I'm not a stranger to these things. And talk about where God's met you in that. You want to go after their hearts. So this is not just about, hey, we are going to rein in. You know, no more internet for you. You know, you're not going to be a cool kid anymore. You're getting a flip phone. You know, we'll talk about technology in a moment, but you want to start going after the heart, because the thing here is not behavior modification. You know, you want to start helping them to connect with the deeper issues going on. The Bible talks about going, you know, sin, so often sin being an issue of idolatry. When my life is hard, I go for places looking for relief and comfort. That's a big component of our sin. I would say that's a big component of sexual sin, pornography in particular. I can escape into this world, and I can escape all this other stuff that is getting me down. So you want to start helping your kids connect to why they're doing the things that they do. What is it that is stressful? Where is their anxiety or frustration? What is going on behind these behaviors? By the way, they're not going to probably understand that when they've first been caught. How are they going to understand it? As you walk with them through it, as they fall again and have a new opportunity to reflect on why and what was going on and what the context was for their sin. So I already mentioned it, be willing to acknowledge your own histories. You need to start asking questions about the history. I would not assume if I've caught my child that, I mean, sometimes God is merciful and this happens the very first time you get caught. Usually not. Usually there's been a pattern of behavior that's gone on that God is just exposing. So start probing for the history, find out what's been going on. So it is important to monitor. I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to say a whole lot here about technology. I did mention one thing that I think is helpful, that Disney Circle. So you need to be faithful in monitoring. So the idea with the castle and the fortifications here is, you know, you need certain levels of protection. So I'll give you a gardening example. I've gotten into gardening. Gardening is a wonderful Sabbath activity for me, because, you know, when you work with people, I don't know if I can get an amen from Pastor Raymond or anyone else that works with people, but there's times you go home thinking, did I accomplish anything today? But when I go out, when I get home and I can pick tomatoes, or I can see the little seedlings growing in my basement, I get wonderful satisfaction. So anyway, gardening example. In my old house, the only thing I was contending with critter-wise were like rabbits and groundhogs. So chicken wire was fine. Like, all you needed was a couple feet off the ground, you're okay. Then we moved just a couple miles away, but now I have deer. There's this woods that's close by, so I'm dealing with deer. Now it's like Fort Knox. I've got this 7-foot fence around it. My wife is mortified. My neighbors are very gracious. What are you dealing with? Part of figuring out how do I establish safeguards is you have to understand the depth of the problem. So that's the kind of probing that I was talking about earlier. You want to start off with as least intrusive safeguards as possible. Safeguards shouldn't be punitive. And that's what I'm saying. You're not going to say, oh, you have to have a flip phone now. You don't want to be punitive. Think about it this way. God is never punitive with us. Jesus was punished so that we would not be punished. God's never punitive. When you go through discipline, it's always a course correction. You're going the wrong way. You need to go this way. Sometimes it's incredibly painful course correction. It might feel punitive, but it never is. Because Jesus was punished so we wouldn't be. It's the same way with our kids. You want to do whatever course correction is necessary. And so for example, assuming that it's like a smartphone or something that's the problem, I would want to start establishing safeguards. That probably means taking Safari off it. It probably means shutting down their ability to download apps and stuff like that. And then you monitor it and see how they do. You pay attention to what's going on the internet in your house. If there are repeated attempts to break out, if you get caught again, then you're saying, okay, we need a bigger fence here. Obviously, this isn't working. But the context is always relational, and it's always in love. It's never punitive. Along those lines, obviously, you need to monitor things like friendships and romantic relationships and all that stuff. We can talk about that more if people are interested. The biggest thing here, I would say, wrapping up, is that you want to keep walking with them. You want to keep walking with them. That is so, so important. That you don't just have, again, one-and-done conversations, that you check in, that you be willing to check in. You know, I have friends, even some friends in ministry that I know have had struggles with this in the past. It's hard to have to keep asking questions of people. Hey, I haven't seen you for a couple months, and you catch up on different things, and how are you doing with this? But I know loving them means they know I'm going to ask them those questions, you know. And I would say that that's the same with our kids. You should assume that temptation is there. You should assume that whatever pressures in school or whatever were driving them to do that in the first place are still there. So that's a whole other way of questioning, right? So how are you doing with that? Where are you going with that? Are you starting to turn to God? Are you coming home just eating a bunch of potato chips? You know, what are you doing to start dealing with this? So be faithful in prayer for them. You know, keep asking God to reveal, but don't just don't leave it there. Keep pursuing them on it and walking with them. The last thing I would say, the best sex education is keep doing everything you can to work on your own marriage. You know, the best sex education is to have your kids looking at your marriage and that your marriage demonstrates that sex is worth waiting for. Marriage is worth waiting for. That is so, so important.